You're listening to the Happy Doc Student Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing clarity to the often mysterious doctoral process. Do you feel like you're losing your mind? Let me and my guests show you how to put more joy in your journey and graduate with your sanity, health, and relationships intact.
I'm your host, Dr. Heather Frederick, and on today's episode, I welcome Dr. Clint Pearman. Clint is a nationally recognized certified brain injury specialist and trainer, a mind-body health and wellness educator and coach, the founder of ABC Wellness Zone, Bacotti Global, and the Tai Chi Edge, all organizations engaged in providing simple solutions for optimizing physical, mental, and cognitive health and well-being. I had the honor of chairing Clint's doctoral research, during which he investigated the key considerations for building a Tai Chi-enhanced workplace health and wellness program, and that research led to further endeavors, one of which we'll talk about today, Tai Chi-enhanced mental health for doctoral students. Clint, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Heather. I am excited to be on the show with you. I've listened to your show, and I really have to say I am honored to be in the company of the guests that you've had on your show. So I appreciate it, and I'm honored to be here.
Well, having had a first row seat to how you proceeded through your doctoral program, I'm so excited for what you have to share with the audience today. Why don't we start with you spending just a few minutes introducing yourself and sharing why was it that you pursued a doctoral degree?
That's a great question. And I actually love answering that because there's a big meaning behind that. As my parents started to get older, reaching into their late 80s and 90s, I noticed that they were experiencing various health issues that I didn't think they knew enough about to slow down or reverse. For example, you know, the typical African-American family, we don't eat healthy. They were overweight. My dad, I don't ever remember seeing my dad exercise or do any of the things we talk about you have to do today. And then as my dad got older, my mom put my dad in a senior citizen center. And then my big sister calls us up and says, hey, did you know mom put dad in a senior citizen center? Now, my dad was like 93. So I said, well, he is old, isn't he? What's wrong with that? She didn't think that was funny because she said, well, she put him in there and they're treating him for Alzheimer's. But I knew my dad didn't have Alzheimer's. So we actually held a meeting with the staff and I left there thinking they didn't have a good grasp on what they were doing with my dad. For example, when I asked, so who diagnosed my dad with Alzheimer's? And one of the answers were, well, your mom said your dad's memory was a little slow. So I looked at the doctor and I said, so my mom diagnosed my dad? I mean, you know, my mom slapped me in the head, says, don't be rude to the doctors. Well, I left out of there and my initial thought was, I'm going to go home and I'm going to get a medical degree now. I'm going to medical school. Now, mind you, I'm like 55 years old going to medical school. You're right. So I went home and I started Googling medical school, which would have been like 15 years ago. I'm Googling medical school when I realized, nah, I'm not really that serious and I'm probably way too old to go to medical school. I'm just going to go back to school and get a doctorate degree in something where I can learn enough about health to teach people what they need to know. And this takes us to our topic here. I originally began, my focus was a PhD in health psychology, and my research was focused originally on obesity in general and obesity in the African American community in particular. Oh, I love one of the guests you had on recently that talked about knowing what you wanted to write your dissertation on when you began the program. Well, when I began my program thinking I was going to study obesity, I knew what my dissertation was going to be. So this kind of expands on what your guest talked about. Every single paper that I wrote was tied to obesity in general and African Americans in particular. So at the end of my classroom work, before we got into the dissertation, I had accumulated enough literature from the research on various areas of obesity. I wrote a book and published a book based on the research. So I understand when they say, know what you want to study in advance. However, when I began the program, I also started a business. All those companies that you mentioned, I started ABC Wellness Zone, which grew into an international health coaching practice. And I started Clint Perriman Enterprises, which was my speaking business, and a health coaching practice. And they got in the way of my studies. This will help a lot of students. And after about 6 years in the program, I had to take a break, not knowing you only have 7 years.
A lot of people, Clint, don't realize a clock starts ticking.
Yes. So I take a 2-year break, think I'm going to come back. School says, you ran out of time. What are you talking about? I got like just my dissertation. No, you run out of time. I was like, wow, that's so crazy. So then I went and just simply started looking at other programs. That really didn't even bother me because I'm a student of education and knowledge and I love learning. So it didn't bother me. I just then enrolled in the next school, which was the University of Arizona Global Campus, and had to literally take about 2 years of classes before I could get to the same stage I was in when I began. And that process made me think about a couple of things. There isn't a problem with obesity. We already know the solution for obesity. You need to eat better and exercise. That is not the problem. What I learned was the problem is behavioral change. We don't know how to get people to make those changes. So when I began the second go-round for my doctorate, my new focus was now on how can I develop or design a simple behavioral change process that will be easy and enjoyable to get people to change their behavior to healthy behaviors. And by coincidence, I ran through the research in Tai Chi, and I had already been studying Tai Chi since 2006. I probably already had about 10 years of training and learning Tai Chi, but like most Tai Chi instructors, never thought about Tai Chi in the light of a behavioral change. So then the new program I began was focused on the health enhancing benefits of Tai Chi in the workplace. So my journey began actually over 2012, and it took me until 2022 to finish through two different schools. So that was my journey.
Well, I'm so pleased that you're done and making the change that you knew you were going to make before you started the program. But sharing your journey, I think, is just so important for so many people to hear because it wasn't a straight line. You went into it, though, with an attitude of I'm a lifelong learner. And everything that I'm learning is bringing me towards this goal of being able to make change in my community, which is exactly what you're doing now. And as chair, it was so interesting to read all the work and all the research and everything that you were bringing to the table about Tai Chi. But what I really wanted to share, and I'm sure the listeners heard it as you were sharing your story, was that you were such a joy to chair because of how you went through the program. And I know because I asked you, are you practicing Tai Chi? Is this one of the reasons you're able to take the feedback in this spirit that's intended, which is to help you create a better product? And I never had to worry about giving you feedback because I knew you were going to be like, oh, that's great. Let's go. Let's change this. That's an excellent idea. Let's pivot it. There was no resistance. And so that was the word I was thinking this morning. How would I describe my experience with Clint? It was that you truly did want to create this product it was going to have an impact on your life and the lives of others, but there was no resistance. There were things that happened, right? Data got lost, committee members left, but you were not resistant, defensive. You just took it all in stride. And I believe Tai Chi, your practice of Tai Chi, had a lot to do with the mindset that you had as you were going through your journey.
You know, that is so important. In fact, I wasn't thinking of how Tai Chi was actually supporting my mental health through this journey. And I think the reason I wasn't thinking because I naturally did Tai Chi and at a minimum once a day. And sometimes if I had a class, it may be three or four times a day, I'm going through the Tai Chi. So on the occasions when you were providing feedback, I was thinking, maybe I'm just naturally like this, not even considering maybe it's the cognitive component of Tai Chi. Tai Chi helps you calm your mind and relax your body. Maybe that's what it was. I did not come to that or did not start thinking that until I began doing the research. And then once I began doing the research, then I started thinking, you know what? I think all this Tai Chi I'm doing is why most students would be stressed out through their program. I know that because, well, the literature tells us 50% drop out because they don't make it. But I know that firsthand because I have seen students through my 10 years in the program get stressed out and drop out of the program. I wish I knew what I knew now because I would have been able to share this stuff with them at that point and maybe some of them would have stuck around. So I appreciate you recognizing that. And it was a joy working with you because as many doctoral students know, there is a variety of instructors we're going to face. And because there is a variety of personalities, a variety of styles, you got to hope you either have the ability to adapt or you're resilient enough or your mental health is strong enough to deal with sometimes when you have an instructor or professor that may not merge with your personality. I think we matched up perfect because you told me what to do and I went and did it.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said about taking time to make sure there's a good fit. I was immediately interested in the topic that you presented. So that made it exciting for me, right? I was looking forward to your drafts. But we also had a similar style where I prefer to be on the phone and talk through things and do Zoom calls. And you wanted to do that too. So just a little shout out there for people who have not yet picked their chair or maybe are struggling with some of their relationships with their committee. Think about that fit. And know that, yes, you can maybe work to be a little more adaptable, but sometimes if it's not a good fit, there are reasons to seek out a better fit. I've got shows on that. I'll make sure there's links in the show notes also to the one that you spoke about earlier, Clint, with Dr. Frank Buck. I'll make sure that one's in the show notes as well. But let's just take a few steps back and have you explain what is Tai Chi for the listeners who don't know?
Awesome. Great question. And I actually have a video as part of my Tai Chi Edge app where I begin that topic with, we don't know, Tai Chi is a lot of things. First and foremost, when you go back 400 years, Tai Chi was a martial arts. That's the first thing I always tell people, especially the students. Well, what do you mean? What is Tai Chi? First and foremost, it is a martial arts. And 400 years ago, it was a superior martial arts. Now, most people don't practice Tai Chi for its martial arts benefits or don't practice it for martial arts anymore. Most people today practice it for its health enhancing benefits. It is part of what is known as Qigong. So Qigong is traditional Chinese medicine. Now, here's where Tai Chi gets the health benefit. First thing you want to know is Tai Chi is a part or is a form of Qigong. What is Qigong? Qigong is traditional Chinese medicine that focuses on the mind-body component of breathing, relaxation, the slow movement, tapping, things like that. Tai Chi a martial arts, and we could do another show to talk about the history, so we won't go there. But as the story goes, one story, and because 400 years ago, the Chinese did not write a lot of this down. A lot of the Tai Chi history and Qigong history was passed down by word of mouth. So one of the word of mouth stories about how Tai Chi and this mind-body medicine got merged, I heard, was a monk from India. He used to be a prince. He was invited to China to teach Buddhism. After he got there, the emperor at that time didn't like the type of Buddhism he was teaching. So he told the monk, I don't need you. The monk went to the Shaolin Temple to check out the monks in the Shaolin Temple. And he noticed those monks were just sitting around meditating. And they were weak and sickly. Now, not to take anything away from meditation, because meditation is great, but if all you do is spend your time meditating, you're going to run into some other health problems. So this monk saw the other monks just sitting around meditating. He realized they were unhealthy and weak and sickly. As the story goes, he secluded himself for, I think it was 7 years. When he emerged, he taught him Tai Chi. And as the way the story goes, when he taught him Tai Chi, at some point in the future after that, the emperor started hiring the Tai Chi martial artists, those monks, as their bodyguards. Now, I don't know, because it's all passed down through word of mouth, but this was found in some of the literature. So the reason I bring that up is Tai Chi is a lot of things. It's a mind-body exercise. It's traditional Chinese medicine. You can also look at it as a martial arts. However, the version that I teach and the version that people are teaching Tai Chi in the community centers, at hospitals, at clinics, it is not the martial arts version of Tai Chi. It is what I like to call the health version of Tai Chi. When you read the books on Tai Chi from the masters and the grandmasters, they talk about this stuff that I'm about to mention. They talk about actively relaxing your body. They talk about deep breathing. They talk about controlling and coordinating the movement. They also write about in their books, they write about focusing your concentration on attention in the now. And think about this. When you do those four things, it becomes moving meditation. Now, the writers talk about it, but in all the Tai Chi classes I've attended and programs, which is probably in excess of 7 to 10 different programs, some of them from some high-level Tai Chi instructors, rarely did they put an emphasis on the health-enhancing components. One organization, which is a great organization, I began training with them right in the beginning of COVID when I realized they were teaching the martial arts component, and I'm too old for that martial arts stuff. So I lasted a whole year learning Tai Chi, but within that whole year, and that was 2 or 3 sessions a week, within that whole year, I do not recall once being taught the emphasis on those four things: relax your body, deep breathe, focus your concentration, and control your... I don't ever remember that. But if you get the books, you'll learn that is where there's chapters on this stuff in the books. But once it gets out to the instructors teaching Tai Chi, they leave that component out. Last teeny story on the Tai Chi component. I took training from a really high-level health Tai Chi instructor, well known around the world. And in that training, they taught specific components of what to do to improve fall prevention, stress, and heart conditions. They taught, this is what you want to do, but never explain why, or never explain the mechanism by which Tai Chi exerts that force. So while Tai Chi is a lot of things and many instructors teach it in different ways, the version that I teach puts an extremely large emphasis on the health-enhancing benefits of Tai Chi. So if you were to Google Tai Chi, you'll get multiple definitions. The simple version, Tai Chi is a martial arts, but most people today practice it for its health-enhancing benefits, which then turns it into a mind-body exercise using the philosophy and principles of Qigong. That was a long way, but that should explain it.
Well, that gives the listeners a lot of information so that they can start looking if this is sounding good to them. I mean, you're breathing, you're learning how to relax your body so you have a calm and clear mind, so you're able to think the way you need to think in a doctoral program. There are the physical health benefits, so you're not having to take time out because you're in pain or you're sick. So lots of reasons a doctoral student should want to check this out. I'm wondering, you said the type that you teach, how would they find programs that are the type of Tai Chi that you're promoting?
That is a brilliant, great question. I have not found any. That's why I created it. So there may be other programs that put a large emphasis on that health component. If there is, please email me and let me know where they are, because I haven't found them. So I created the program that I use, and I actually call it Tai Chi. So the version of Tai Chi, and I should add this, there are five fundamental families of Tai Chi. The Chen style, they started it. Yang style, which is the model I use. Then there is the Su style, Wu style, and Hu style. Five basic families. I think I'm adding a sixth. Now, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get some email about, what are you talking about? You're starting a new version. Yeah, I'm starting a new version. The version I'm starting, and if there is a version out there that's already putting a large emphasis on those four things, let me know. I'd love to coordinate or collaborate with them. As of right now, I don't know. So anyone that's interested in that, you can visit my page. I have an app that I'm actually in the process of building. You can find it at TaiChiEdge.com.
Okay, TaiChiEdge.com. Yeah, yes. And I will make sure that that's in the show notes too. So the first question I'm thinking an audience member might be wondering at this point, well, hang on, I'm super busy, Clint, and this sounds great, but what kind of time commitment do I need to spend on Tai Chi to get all these benefits you're talking about?
That's great, because we all are busy, and especially if you're pursuing a doctoral program and you're a working family student. You have a life that doesn't just evolve, well, it should evolve around your program. If you want to be stressed out, if you don't want to be stressed out, you need to find easy and simple exercise. And I think Tai Chi is it. So first, you have to learn the form first. However, what I teach at the hospital takes about 2 minutes to do. Let me rephrase that. It takes some time to learn it. They learn it in about 6 weeks, but they only get it 1 hour a week. So in 1 hour a week, my patients at the hospital will learn this version that we're talking about. And then once you've learned it, to do the version takes 2 minutes. What that literally means is you can get a full body moderate level exercise in 2 minutes. But I need to preface it or add this. It's predominantly a mental exercise. While Tai Chi is physical, there is a physical component and there are physical benefits. The vast majority of the health-enhancing benefits from Tai Chi come from the mental and cognitive component, where you're using your mind. And once you've learned the form, 2 minutes. Now, the full version that I teach with my community group is called the Yang Style 24 form. Everyone that knows anything about Tai Chi, they will know Yang Style 24 form. That is the traditional version of Tai Chi that the Chinese government sanctioned the Sports Federation of China to create. So in 1956, the Chinese government asked four Tai Chi masters to create a health and wellness program that can be taught in the parks and the gyms to help the citizens, the community, become healthier. Those four teachers were Tai Chi masters, And they created what is now known as Yang Style 24 Form. I had a student learn it in 30 days. One of my top students, 30 days. But he was practicing every single day. The average student takes about 90 days. Once you've learned it, it takes 6 minutes to do the entire routine. And at the end of the routine, you have a full body workout. What I teach at the hospital is a shortened version of that 24 version, which is only 6 forms. From my clinical experience, just doing the 6 forms gets a clinical level of relevance for helping the patients improve their mental health challenges, which might range from stress issues, anxiety issues, depression, anger issues, trauma, and post-traumatic stress, and traumatic brain injury issues also.
So there's an investment, there's a commitment that a practitioner would take to learn the movements. But once you learn the movements, whether it's 2 minutes or 6 minutes, you're seeing significant changes in these things that if we change them for the better, like anxiety, stress, feelings of overwhelm, it will assist a doctoral student with completing their program. And that's the end goal here, right? Not being part of that 50% that drops out, but even more than that, the icing on the cake, finishing like you did, which was with a big smile on your face, excited for the next stage of your life.
Yes. And so let me kind of hone in on that topic. How does this Tai Chi specifically relate to doctoral students? Now, depending on the scientists you look at, I'm going to use Harvard's version since I actually was trained by Harvard to do Tai Chi. Believe it or not, Harvard has a Tai Chi program. And even in Harvard's program, they did not put an emphasis on these 4 things. But here's the part I like. Harvard identifies 7 what they call brain abilities. The 7 brain abilities can be broken down into an acronym I came up with that's term PAMSLEM. PAMSLEM. The first brain ability is perception. Your ability to perceive what's going on. Your ability to perceive the incoming information, sensory information, and then process it. That's important if you're a doctoral student, especially when your chair is speaking to you. Now, I jokingly say that because I have some clients as part of my community-based program. They're joining me because either their doctor told them you should start doing Tai Chi or they figured it out on their own. And they may have mild cognitive impairment. Tai Chi can help that. And I'll explain that in a second. So after perception, and I should have prefaced this with this, Tai Chi exercises these brain abilities is A, which is attention. You have to be able to focus your attention, concentration, and your thoughts on what you're doing and not be distracted by everything else going on around when you should be doing your work. So P, perception, A, attention, M, memory. After M, it's S, which is self-assessment. This is extremely important for doctoral students. Your ability to listen to what your chair or your committee is telling you, assess what you're doing, and then modify it. So I've seen students weren't able to take what they were told or suggested and want to just argue about what they want to do. With Tai Chi, you're constantly self-assessing what you're doing. Every single form, once you're taught it and you think you have it, you now have to focus on doing it right and then realize, okay, that's not, it should be a little bit. In other words, you're self-assessing what you're doing. L stands for language. Now, language, we're not going to touch on that much because if you're in the doctoral program, we assume you understand language well enough to get here. All of these brain abilities and the next 3 I'm going to cover, all of them can be interfered with because of stress, anxiety, depression. All of those things can interfere with your ability to perceive what's being said, attention, your memory, self-assessment, language, and then after language is the big one, E, executive functioning. The first thing executive functioning allows you to do is set a goal. That's the whole process of how we plan. You have to know what is the end result, what is the goal, and then after you set the goal, executive functioning is your ability to develop a plan. If you cannot develop a plan, you could possibly have executive functioning issues, and Tai Chi forces you to have to do all of that stuff. We'll touch that in a moment. After developing the plan, you then have to execute the plan. This is all part of executive functioning. Set the goal, develop the plan, execute the plan. And then as you're executing the plan, this happened to me a couple of times, which made me go, I cannot believe this. So after you're executing your plan, you now need to be flexible enough to adjust your thinking and your plan. Sometimes you may not need to change the goal, but you may have to change the plan. Why? Life gets in the way. So learning Tai Chi, every session when you're learning the form, for example, when I have my classes, I may notice some students, they're not at the level to be in the class doing this level. So they have to adjust. They may have thought, no, I'm ready for stage three. Now I'm thinking, you're not that advanced. If their executive functioning is working and self-assessment, they'll realize, yeah, you're right. I'm not up to the level with these guys. I need to go to that level. So after executive functioning, the last is motor coordination. Now, when I first started studying that part, I thought motor coordination was actually the movement. When in fact, in order to do the movement, it takes brain power. Your brain has to be working properly in order for you to first perceive what you're supposed to do, pay attention and listen. This is all being done with the Tai Chi. It's all strengthening those. Then memorize. Now, many times the students, their memory might be a little slow. Like today, one of my students today told me, I think I'm dyslexic. So I said, well, that's great because I'm going to teach you how to do Tai Chi in teeny weeny steps so that we alter your nervous system in little itty bitty steps, reprogramming your neuronal circuits by teeny steps at a time. That's the same thing you may have to go through as a doctoral student in the program, especially when you're at the part where you're doing your dissertation or your doctoral project. You may not have the professor holding your hand, so you need all of these brain abilities and most important, executive functioning, which is the ability to set the goal, the ability to develop the plan, the ability to then execute the plan. And after you execute the plan, alter, shift, or change when the situation arises. I was kind of amazed that there was some research specifically designed for doctoral students. And in some of that research, they talk about how Tai Chi can have a positive effect on executive function.
Well, as you talk about all the amazing things that Tai Chi can assist with, it really does seem like the perfect practice for a graduate student to adopt to support them in their journey. And like you said, there's quite a bit of research out there. There's more and more research being published, not unlike some of the other things that we're becoming more aware of, like yoga and other mindfulness practices. But I personally got to witness how a Tai Chi practice impacted your journey. Again, that was so neat for me to see and really made me a believer. Sometimes you can read about the evidence, but the proof is in the pudding, right? And here was a student practicing it and really progressing through the program in such a stellar way. So thank you for sharing. Before we sign off for today, Clint, do you have a favorite quote or some final words of wisdom you'd like to share?
Yes. My group, my community-based group, we come up with these different phrases and we make shirts to put them on. And the latest one we came up with was this. If everyone did Tai Chi every day, the world would be a healthier, better place to be.
I love that. And it would, because could you imagine a world of people breathing, actively relaxing, working on their cognitive capacity, their stress response? And really, Tai Chi also is a community, right? So you've got a community of support. It's so many things. I have practiced it in a community when I lived down in the valley. We had Tai Chi in the park, and it was really a beautiful, amazing experience for me. And I just want to encourage the listeners, if anything Clint has shared has piqued your interest, to check out the links in the show notes below and give this a shot. I don't think you'll be disappointed. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a joy and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Until then, if you're looking for more ways to invite joy in your journey, check out the free resources at expandyourhappy.com. You'll find downloads like an article I wrote titled "The Doctoral Journey, 12 Things You Need to Know That They Probably Won't Tell You." You'll also find a PDF that organizes all podcasts by the 7 steps detailed in the Happy Doc Student Handbook, which you can also find on the website. Finally, if you're looking for a Happy Doc Student swag, I've got that too. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and YouTube channel. And if you want to make my day, rate and review so that together we can change the way doctoral education is delivered and experienced. Hey, one more thing. Just a quick reminder that the information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only.